Hello, my name is Paul Claxton, and welcome to the Explainable AI podcast. I'm here with our guest today, Rohan Hall. Rohan, if you would like to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit more about your background in AI and how you got to where you're at today, and maybe a little bit about your company, that would be fantastic.
Certainly, Paul. Would love to. Thanks for having me, by the way. I appreciate being here. So my journey to AI is actually quite interesting. So I've been involved in technology for more than 40 years, actually. I've built tech for some of the largest companies, including HP and Oracle and Honda and Corning and PeopleSoft. And so my background goes way deep into a variety of technologies. And I've done all kinds of roles from being CTO, developers, I've developed in multiple languages over the years. But the last decade, I've been focused a lot on building blockchain technologies for different platforms. But about a year ago, I'd left a role that I had as a CTO. A chief technology officer for a publicly traded company, and decided that I wanted to build a different a crypto payment solution, which was to do cross border payment, peer to peer from anywhere in the world to anywhere in the world. And so I was really excited about the idea, and I had a meeting with Tim Draper. So Tim Draper is one of the largest venture capitalists in the blockchain space. And he's also behind Meet the Drapers, which is a TV program. And so I was at an event with Tim. I met Tim a few times. Tim had funded one of my startups as well in the past. So I was one of the portfolio companies already for Draper. So I wanted to pitch Tim on this new idea about cross-border payment. And I had a meeting and I told him about what it is I was trying to do, and I wanted to get his feedback. I was really excited. I wanted to get funding for this project from him as well. And to my horror and disappointment, he just totally hated the idea. he just gave me like really solid reasons why, Rohan, this is probably not the best thing to be doing right now, right? And this was right after FTX had crashed in the crypto space and the whole market was down. But when I got finished talking to him, we were at this really amazing event, this beautiful hotel up in the Silicon Valley area, right? And I remember just being horrified that he just, and he's a really nice guy, right? And I remember walking away and flying back to LA. I'm like, what does he know? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I'm not going to listen to him, right? But of course, it's Tim Draper. You can't ignore that kind of solid advice. It's like, crap, shit, what do I do now, right? So I had to rethink the whole thing. And it was really deep in blockchain at the time. And then maybe like a week or so later, I woke up I have a bad habit of waking up at 4 a.m. I look at my phone, I go downstairs and, I start reading, I read, tech stuff for fun, right? So I read stuff about, blockchain and AI and quantum computing and, people get up at 4 a.m, they watch TV. I read articles, right? So I'm doing that. And one of the article was millionaire interviewed and said if he were to start over, he would create an AI company and just make passive income and it would generate millions of dollars or something like this, right? It went, so I read the article and I'm like, whatever, right? Kept on reading other articles. And then I woke up in the morning, I was like, ding, 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 my brain started shooting off, like, holy crap, And so I had to go back and find the article and reread it, right? And I didn't know who it was at the time. But then after reading the article, I Googled to see who this guy was. And the guy is Matt Higgins from Shark Tank, okay? And And so I Googled a bit more, and I'd been introduced to generative AI with ChatGPT a few months before when they just dropped it in November of 2022, which was maybe 6 months from then that I was going through this stuff now, more like 8 months. And I remember when I used ChatGPT first time, and I was just kind of like playing around with it like most people did at the time. And I thought, this is just too accurate, these guys. And then I kind of, well, I was like, they're going to get sued. It's not even worth it. Because all the way they could have done this stuff. And I knew algorithmically what they'd done just from playing with it, right, for a few minutes, right? That there was no attribution to any of the content. And clearly they went and got every content because it was just randomly acts and stuff. That, you know, this must have been proprietary stuff, right? And so I remember looking at it, I'm like, and I was still CTO at the time for this company. And so I didn't have time to play with it, so I left it. But now, that morning after waking up, and I'm like, holy crap, right? So I started, you know, let me just do a little bit more research and see where the technology was. And I started researching and deep diving. It's like, wow, these guys did something really, really cool here, you know? And then I went on LinkedIn and I found Matt Higgins, and I said, you know, I didn't expect a response, just kind of like an acknowledgement. Hey dude, this is a really great article. Thank you. I really was looking for some direction. And this was just like, I love the, you know, and I'm like, I'm going to go and look at this more. I'm going to do it. And so I started, this is how literally that AI, and I've known AI before, right? I was an architect for a $3 trillion AUM company called Capital Group American Fund. So I did research for all the top emerging technologies, including AI and blockchain and quantum computing and neuromorphic computing and all the emerging stuff, right? So it's pretty aware of all of that stuff. But also like a couple of years before. And I think what a lot of people, what I realized on that morning and what a lot of people that knew AI and or didn't know, I didn't realize, is that it wasn't the AI that your dad grew up with, right? Gen AI is a whole different animal. Yeah. And that was kind of what really occurred to me that morning is that, you know, like AI, sorry, AI guys, but AI guys have been the guys in the basement, right? That nobody heard from these guys. They're building stuff that one day never really emerged. And when I started playing with Gen AI, I'm like, no, this is not the old stuff. This is like a whole new animal. This is like, these guys are doing stuff that is just crazy, right? And so for me, when I get introduced to new technology, so I've been coding for like 40 years, right? When I get to new technology, I can't understand it until I write code. That's my instinctive thing, right? When I got introduced to blockchain, my first thing is let's write some smart contracts and see what it does, right? And that's what got me into blockchain, because for me, that validates the technology. And so for AI, I needed to write some code to see what it can or can't do. I needed to check the boundaries, right? And the more I dug into it, the more I'm like, holy crap, really? And so I literally started this deep dive off it that it was now June last year, 2023. Every year, my wife is French, and every year we go to visit our family. We take like a month or two with the kids and, you know, to get away. We had tickets. And I said to my wife, honey, I'm sorry. I'm not going to France this year. And she's like, what? I said, tell your parents I love them. I will see them next year. But this stuff is just massively huge that the whole world has just changed and nobody seemed to recognize it as yet. And so I stayed home by myself. My entire family went to France, right? And all I did was just code and deep dive. And then I evolve around, I don't know, maybe 2 months later. Okay, I totally get this stuff. This is crazy. And then we started building technologies, right? And so the first thing that I built, coming from the blockchain space, we built a And I went and grabbed some developers that, you know, had worked for me in the past. And let's really, really test it out now. Let's create some products out of it. And the first thing was, can we use AI to audit blockchain smart contracts? Because there's so many issues and vulnerabilities and people are hacking it and all these kind of things, right? And so that was the first thing we built. I created a company surrounding that. The company is called Codegenie, because my thing was, the genie is out of the bottle. No one's going to put this thing back in the bottle. The world has changed. And so, you know, let's build some code, you know, using this genie. And so that's where the company named Codegenie AI came from. And so we built a blockchain smart contract auditing technology. And then we're like, oh, if we can audit blockchain code, can we not audit any kind of code, right? So we started seeing if we could audit Python and JavaScript and everything. And I'm like, and it was like, the accuracy was just scary. It was just like, holy mackerel, like I've never seen anything like this. And then I'm like, okay, I had a PeopleSoft consulting firm years ago, but I had no people code, right? And a friend of mine that was still a PeopleSoft consultant, so I emailed him. I said, dude, do you have some people code? I want to test this stuff, right? So he sent me some people code and we ran it through our algorithms, right? And it was correct. I found every issue with the people code. I'm like, wow. So anyway, that's what I got involved in with that. And now we're getting towards the end of the year. And we started saying, okay, I need to put this into the market. I don't want to spend tons of money on marketing and so forth. Let's write some algorithms to start creating blogs and start creating some things so we don't have to spend money and so forth. And then every time I went to some meeting and I said, we're doing all these cool things with auditing, you know, smart contracts and all these things. And I was like, well, how are you going to market? Well, we're building some little algorithms, right, that we can help to scale our stuff without paying people. And they're like, oh, but can I have that? I'm like, no, but we're not building a technology about that. We're just really doing it for ourselves. But we got so many requests from that we decided to build a product out of that. And so the product is Traffic Monster. And so we can speak about Traffic Monster a little bit later if you want. But the whole idea is how can you use AI to create massive, massive online visibility to eventually use that to drive traffic, leads, all these things, and how can you do that all AI driven? So that's kind of where we are now. We just launched that product a week ago. It's going really, really well. But the whole thing started with literally Tim Draper telling me that my idea is really not the place to go. And then Matt Higgins, you know, in an interview that I read like 4 a.m, just kind of like woke me up to the new AI, not the old AI, because everything that we can do today with AI that I can literally do in an hour, it would have taken me months to do it before there was generative AI. You know, which kind of like takes us into the next question regarding, now that we can do that, how can we manage that, right? Which is where explainable AI comes in.
Wow, that is an amazing story. And I am just, you know, taken aback, and I've got so many questions for you. Myself, you know, being an AI venture capitalist and serial entrepreneur, you know, I think the first thing the first question that I want to pose to you is, you know, given the title of this podcast and the title of today's show, Future-Proofing AI, the Next Generation of AI Models, you know, how do we create a culture? You know, how do we create a culture, not just in terms of business, but also in terms of everybody's colloquial, you know, everyday understanding, dictionary textbook understanding of what explainable AI is? How do we simplify that so that, hey, you know, a 5-year-old who's using their parents' Amazon Echo or their parents' iPhone, you know, they realize what they're interacting with? How do we make that so that everyone from the age of one to the age of 99 can understand what they're using from an explainability standpoint?
I'll kind of change that around a little bit. My question would be, if I walk into the room right now and I flip the light switch on, I have no idea what happened. I don't, but I know the light came on, okay, and it worked, okay? And when I go and I start my car to drive it, I am the worst mechanic. I have no clue what happens. I turn the key and I know how to drive it, right? When we are making decisions ourselves, okay, in our own brains, right? Do we really know what triggered that? We don't in most cases, right? We may stop to be more introspective, which we should, I think, more times than people do. So part of the question is, does everyone need to understand this? And I would say no, but I do believe that there are times that you do need to understand it, right? I'll give you a quick little story. I was in Tokyo some years ago in Japan, and I was on a software consulting project for a company called Corning. They're a big multinational company, and we're doing like a global implementation of PeopleSoft technology. And I was working with a friend of mine who's now still, we're still friends. This was like 20 years ago, literally. And so we were there, and we were working on this project, and we wanted to go for dinner. So we went for a walk, and I think we were in Ginza at the time. So we went for a walk, and we found this restaurant. It looks really, really nice, very, very upscale. And we're like, okay, let's go to this one for dinner. We tried to get into the restaurant, and they wouldn't let us in. You know, we're like, but, you know, we don't speak Japanese, but we knew enough to say that we're hungry, you know, we wanted to go eat, right? And the guy at the door just would not let us in. So here you have, my friend is Jewish, right? A black guy and a Jewish guy standing in a restaurant in Tokyo, and we're not being let in, right? So what comes to the mind? Is it because I'm black? Is it because I'm Jewish, right? You know, so, you know, we have those default things, right? So we didn't know the why, okay? We didn't know why. We just know that we were not let in, right? So we, of course, went someplace else, talk about it. We went to the office the next day where we had a translator, right? And that job was to help, this guy's job was to help us translate, right? All the Japanese stuff. And we asked him, and he said, because you don't speak Japanese, if he had let you in, especially because it was a higher end restaurant, right? If he had let you in, they would not be able to give you the highest quality service, okay? And by not giving you the highest quality service, then the restaurant would lose face with the other customers that were in there. And they prefer to turn you down than to lose face, right? So he was able to explain something to me that I would never have thought about. That's how this person came to the decision of not letting us in. That's explainable AI. That's how explainable AI works, right? There are going to be times that you want to understand the why, and it's not going to be obvious, okay? So the whole concept of explainable AI is there are these algorithms that are out there now. Like all the things that we're doing with generative AI, there's a lot of it we just don't know. When you hear guys like Sam Altman and other guys like, oh, we don't really know why it did that, right? You know, there's another technology that's emerging that's called neuromorphic computing. And in fact, the same event that I mentioned that I was that I spoke to Tim Draper, this was an event that a lot of the different portfolio companies were. There's a portfolio company that was there as well, that they are doing research on neuromorphic computing. And what neuromorphic computing is, the way that we design chips was good 50 years ago or maybe 20 years ago. But the way the biases design is really not great for what we're doing right now, right? With AI, and we just need a lot more bandwidth, and it's just limited now. And so one research that started about a decade ago is considered neuromorphic computing, right? It's one of the emerging technologies. And this is most likely where chip technology is going to go. It's designing chips to work the way our brains work and the way the synapses in our brains communicate with each other, right? And that will really, really be very good for AI technology and for neural networks. But by default, the way it's designed, it's going to be a better technology. Well, I was talking to one guy, and he's doing research with this company for that. And we're talking about that because, you know, if I get a chance to talk to someone about anything like that, I'm like, tell me what's going on. What are you doing? What's the latest, right? And he said, dude, you know, and my thing is, you know, are you guys, how close are you guys? Are you looking at AGI, you know? And he said, I'll tell you a story, right? And I'm like, tell me, right? He said, the research that they're doing they're doing research with different devices, and the device, one thing is a car, it goes this way, every time it goes this way, goes out the door, make a left turn, goes out, you know, toy car, goes out the door, make a left, goes out the door, yeah. And one day it goes out the door, made a right, right? And they're like, whoa, what just happened, right? Okay, so if you're like a researcher, you'll kind of get what that means. If you're not, then you won't get that, right? When you program devices, it should do the same thing every single time. It should, right? When it does something that you didn't program it to do, it just made a decision. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And that freaked him out. He was telling me about it, right? You know? And so where we're heading the question now is like, why? Why? So when I think about explainable AI, it's quite simple. Why? If I go into Bank of America today and I apply for a loan and I think I'm qualified and and it's rejected, why, right? Because we're going to always, because I'm a woman, you know, I'm a woman's founder, because I'm Black, because I'm a certain age, you know, why? And because AI will be taking over a lot of those decisions already is, we need to have a way to explain why. And the person that's behind the desk won't know, right? They're just giving you the response, right? And then they're going to have your rock, right? But if the AI has made that decision, and then you have another part of that technology, which is an explainable AI algorithm that, okay, it's reject, and here's why. Here are the three reasons why it was rejected, okay? And that's what explainable AI is. It's really algorithms that are used to explain the why that decisions are being made, okay? And that's going to be across, because we're using AI in practically every way, right? You have a autonomous vehicle. It made a decision and ran over someone. Why? Okay? You don't know why, right? That's why you want explainable AI algorithms. So you know, oh, wait a minute, part of the training data was that if this happened, then it should make that decision. Oh, that's why it did it. It doesn't seem so obvious on the surface, but now we know why, because we ran these additional algorithms that told us why. What was the neural pathway, or what was the pathway, or what was the tree path, whichever way it's doing. It had these branches of decisions it could make, but it took this branch. And this is why. These are the influencing things that made it make that decision versus making one of these other decisions. And so that's the whole idea behind explainable AI, is to be able to add the why piece of what we're doing, all of these crazy things that we could do now with AI.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the why piece is so important. I actually used to know a gentleman in Minneapolis. He unfortunately passed a few years back, but his name is David Hoffman. And he had this concept that he called Dude's Law, which is why, the why versus the how, right? A lot of find that, like in business, a lot of organizations are very preoccupied with the process or the how, but that is why innovation, you know, a lot of corporate initiatives, may fail a lot of times because we don't have a purpose behind what we're doing or a why, or maybe perhaps we don't know what that purpose is, right? Maybe it exists, we just haven't found it. And so I agree, Rowan, that is so important to know the why behind AI, right?
Yeah, and you're going to see more of that in almost every area of, you know, why did you not hire me for this job, right? You know, hey, I can't imagine not being the most qualified candidate, but then an AI, again, we're going to be handing over more of these decisions to AI, right? And then you're going to, there'll be someone that's there to deliver the bad news, okay? But the question is, why did AI make that decision? And so this is where there's a whole school of AI related technologies and algorithms that we're building now to be able to explain these things. You know, there's also compliance reasons. You know, Europe GDPR is ahead in that area as well, where they're having pieces of that is mandating that from a compliance point of view, that that European companies can start having explainable AI as a part of what they're doing, so that people can understand the why of what's going on. You know, why did this AI make this decision? You can have more insight on some of those decisions. How did we come about it? I mean, some of the main value of explainable AI, one of them is transparency, right? To have these black box kind of technologies, you know, for first release, that was kind of okay. We're like all intrigued by it. But now we need to have greater transparency, and that's going to happen more and more. You know, interpretability, basically. So if an AI is making a prediction, right, what's behind the prediction? How did the AI come up with this prediction to say, you know, the stock market's going to go up, go down, you know, it's going to rain, it's not going to rain, whatever it is. What were the data points that it gave more weight to in making that decision while ignoring these other data points, right? Also go to the why. You know, you're going to also need to be able to justify some of these decisions, right? In different ways, right? You know, we'll have things that, you know, has to do with, you know, biases, right? You know, and this is where explainable AI will be able to help with that also, because it will be able to say, you know, well, it wasn't really a bias, or it was a bias, but this is really the bias. And it will help you to figure out, this is really a negative bias, and we should really make adjustments maybe to the data sources that we're using. You know, if you're saying, if you have a data source to say, well, you know, as an African-American, hey, if you have a black male between this age and that age, you know, then this is some kind of expectation and where that is negative. And now the AI can say that's part of the reason, and therefore you need a, maybe a broader data set that you're using to do your training of your models, right? So explainable AI will be able to help to spotlight what goes into some of those decisions. You know, you're going to have AI that will have issues, right? And you're going to want to, you may not understand why it's not working, and you may need explainable AI to help you with debugging. And so, you know, by being able to look into like a little focus into that black box of decision making, you'll be able to see, oh, I didn't think about that. You know, now that I understand that it's really taking this into consideration, then we need to make these kinds of adjustments to our model or our algorithms, right? I mean, so these are some of the things: trust, accountability. You know, you're going to need the public also. You know, we're kind of like in our own little AI world right now, and we're feeling everybody is on board. Everybody is not on board, man. There's a lot of people in my family are like, dude, what are you talking about, right? You know, and then there's, you know, the media like to, you know, just pump up end of the world kind of things, right? And, you know, AI is going to take over and stuff like this. So we don't really have that trust in the industry right now, you know, but once we start, you know, leveraging some of these kinds of algorithms, right? So people can have an insight into, you know, into why, you know, I flip the light switch on, this is why it came on versus this is why it didn't come on. Once people are able to have more insights into these decisions, then you'll have trust that will come with that as well. And so these are some of the key things why you need explainable AI, is that we don't always need to know the why, but when we do need to know it, we want to know it, right? You know, for my example in Tokyo, I really wanted to know why, dude, like I have money, you know, why would you not let me into your restaurant? The food looks good from outside, right? So, you know, I would have, it would have been good to have an explainable AI, but my guy, my translator, that was my explainable AI. That was the guy that was able to tell me the next day and to tell me, explain it to me in a very simple way that I could understand it, right? It was a very simple dude. You know, the restaurant would lose space with it. I mean, then I got it, right? Because culturally, for the USA, we don't like really care, you know, for the most part, right? We're like, yeah, you got your credit card, come on in, bro, you know, and, you know, if you don't pick something from the menu, right? But culturally, I lived and worked in Japan for about 6 months, and there are really some very different cultural norms that's there. And that made perfect sense to me once it was explained. And I think that to be able to have that with AI, I think it's going to help a lot with AI adoption from a much wider base of people.
Yes, I agree with a lot of your points there, which, you know, leads me into, you know, so now that we know what, we have a better idea what explainable AI is, you know, now we can talk more about regulation. So you have the companies and then you have the individuals. There's different types of users and builders of AI, right? You have individuals that are out using and building it with third-party applications, or they're building it, you know, indigenously, so to speak, or solo. And then you have companies that are also using it and building it. And the next thing that you know comes to my mind is, okay, so we know what explainable AI is, but then we're talking about regulation. Some people don't want to regulate AI. Some people don't want us to know what AI is. They don't want us to know the why, you know? So policing AI all the way from, you know, the micro economy or the individual up towards the macro economy, the company, these enterprise organizations, you know, that's what I think we're going to have to figure out over the next few years, is how to make sure that, you know, explainability is not an option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I can certainly speak about that as well, where one of my roles, you know, not so long ago. So I've been very deep in compliance for the last decade. A company I founded and exited some years ago was in the Forex space. So we were, you know, building technologies in that space to help people with trading and stuff like that. So I had to learn very, very much about all the AML rules, anti-money laundering. And after that, I was a CTO for a publicly traded company in the blockchain space. And with that, all the AML compliance, also, you know, for all the fintech and those kinds of technology are very, very regulated. But a part of that is, from an explainable AI point of view, is all of these industries, not all, but many, need to deal with compliance, right? Regulatory compliance. And the question is, how do you know if a company that's leveraging AI, how do you know that they're being compliant? How do you know that they're following the AML rules, right? How do you, when auditors come in, how are they able to, like, for example, if you try to audit blockchain technologies, it's very, very difficult to do that with crypto technologies. So you need to have technologies like that uses explainable AI to be able to get into that data and to be able to help to explain, again, the why that certain decisions are made, right? And so, whether it's following, rules from GDPR or CCPA, or whether it's following, rules for AML or KYC, know your customers, KYB, know your business. There are a lot of these kinds of regulations. And now that AI is going to be taking over a lot of those tasks, you really, really need to have a way to explain why someone is passing or not passing. Why are they compliant or are they not compliant based on the data that the AI has processed about that particular company? So if I'm a financial services company, I'm going to be using AI for a lot of that stuff. And now AI is, a lot of the data is now back into that AI black box, right? But the decisions that are being made must pass the regulatory rules and laws and compliance rules, right? And so we need to, again, have a way to be able to have a scope inside what those decisions are. And so that's how we use explainable AI for compliance as well. And that's something that's going to be a really big problem, because already without using AI, it's challenging, right? And there are companies that their entire business is to help with compliance within these different markets and these different space. There's massive industries just surrounding, AML rules and laws, and not just for USA companies. If you're a foreign company that wants to do business with the USA, there's a lot of AML rules that you have to follow that are just, that they don't have to fall in their own countries, but because they've been business in the USA, or with USA citizens, just like if you're a USA company doing business with Europe, you have to follow the GDPR rules. But a lot of these transactions that we're doing that we're not pushing through AI, we're going to need to be able to explain that to auditors, explain that to different groups. And so this is where explainable AI will also come in very handy for these kinds of businesses as well.
For sure. Yeah, it's really important, especially when you get into situations, which we currently have now, but there's going to be more and more situations where we can't, no human is responsible, right? The AI just screwed up, right? The AI made a mistake. Yeah. Or, it had a fault in the system or hallucinated or whatever. But, we're going to have situations like that where, because there's so many layers to this, where, people's lives are at stake or jobs are at stake and livelihoods and whatnot. And there's no human to account for. It's just the AI went rogue, et cetera. Right. So the explainability piece there is so important. And I think that's one thing that a lot of, a lot of citizens are really concerned about too.
Yeah. I'll give another, here's a really great example as well. So, the stuff that we're building right now, we're using, AI agents, and people are going to hear a lot more about this, especially this week. We had OpenAI and Google came out and started showing off what they're doing with AI agents. And just for definition, it's a broad definition, so I kind of like hone down on the way to think about AI agents. So AI agents are really algorithms are processes that are designed to solve specific problems, right? And typically it's autonomous, meaning that you give it some data, you tell it to go solve a problem. It may need to make some decisions on its own, and then it comes back with some kind of result. And then that result may feed into something else. You know, maybe another AI agent will take it off, and then it goes and do its own thing. And then it comes back. And so you can now have a chain or even an army, right? And so what we're using AI agents for in different areas is just solve problems. And instead of having one person try to solve a problem or one, you know, AI agent solve it, a lot of the things that are being done now with Gen AI, and even when you go look at what Google's doing and what OpenAI is doing, they just build a bunch of AI agents and just go solve all these problems, right? And they communicate with each other and they try to figure it out. We're doing the same thing with our company. For Traffic Monster, that's what we're doing. We built a bunch of algorithms and AI agents to solve specific problems, right? The way our technology works is that for a business that wants to have online visibility and to be able to get their message out into the market, we're able to use AI agents to go and just read the website of the business, then to dig in into what is the business trying to do, you know, what's the best way to position themselves, what are not just the top keywords, but long tail keywords. I mean, it goes into like a lot of details in figuring out what our goal is, to figure out if you pay a marketing agency, what's their deliverable to you, right? Their deliverable is typically how to position you into the market, right? How to present you, how to, you know, get your message out. And then we're looking at three areas, basically what marketing companies do, and we build AI agents to do that. Then we're looking at what SEO companies do, right? So SEO companies' job is really to help you figure out how to get your page indexed and ranked and, you know, follow all the Google guidelines, right? And so we have AI agents to do that. And then the third area is like, if you're hiring content writers to write stuff for you, what are they doing, right? They're leveraging the knowledge of all the authors that's ever, you know, written before, and they're positioning you as a brand. But all of that is AI agents, right? But the question is, what are they really doing? We know what they're doing because we're writing all the algorithms to do it, right? But you're going to see more products like ours that you click a button and you have the result. And you're going to be like, I mean, like pretty much every one of our customers is like, holy crap, how did they know that? How did they do that, right? You know? And we're like, it's AI agents, right? But for us, it's still black box and it wanted to be, because from a mark, but if someone actually can, yeah, this is exactly what we're doing, right? We saw Google and OpenAI started talking publicly about how they're using AI agents as well in the last week or two. And where they're now using these agents to be able to, you can have communication directly with your platform. The OpenAI ChatGPT 4.0 uses AI agents for a lot of this stuff as well. Also Google. So when we speak about black box, you're going to have even more black boxes, right? Because that's the whole idea. The whole idea is, can you put together a framework? Because that's what we built our own framework, right? Can you put together a framework with different AI algorithms or different AI agents that can feed off each other, that one go get data here and pass it over here, the other one? So now you have a multitude of different AI agents that the end result is clear, but they each need to do their own part. We started experimenting with that a few months ago for some projects that we were doing for ourselves and for some clients. And we were just blown away just how efficient and how direct and how deterministic our responses were with that. And so we decided to build that into what we're doing for Traffic Monster as well. So you're going to see more of that, where people are figuring out how to leverage AI algorithms and AI agents to help make decisions, but where the end user will just be shocked because it won't make sense how you would have come up or how the AI would have come up with that response, given the limited amount of information that they would have, but not thinking that the framework may be getting data from other places, maybe making different decisions, but that is not transparent on the surface, right? And so people, for us, you know, we're a startup, you know, and you know, so we don't need to explain that to anyone. But if you're doing stuff for governments and government agencies or larger companies, then you'll need explainable AI to be able to explain what's going on behind the scenes and how some of these decisions are being made by these AI agents.
That's wonderful. And I love the concept. I love the product and everything that you just talked about with regards to the Traffic Monster platform and the technology behind that, because what you're doing is you're giving access, right? You're giving people a voice and utility to, you know, express themselves and to do it in a way that's scalable.
Yeah. We're using this, there's a lot of business logic behind what we're doing as well. We're really building a totally scalable platform for individuals, individual businesses. So if you're into sales and marketing, there's a concept called the law of averages. And what it really means is that if you have one sales guy make $1,000 and you want to make 10,000, you hire 10 sales guys, right? If you make 100,000, you hire 100,000 sales guys, right? It's called the law of averages. And it leverages scalability to help growth. We kind of took that approach as well. And we're using the law of averages, saying that if you have 10 blogs in your website, which most people have 10 or less blogs, you can get X amount of traffic. But if you have 100 blogs, you can get X times 10, right? From 10 blogs to 100. But what if you have 1,000 of them, right? So what if you have much more than that? So we're just facilitating that for customers. But we're also using techniques to make sure that the content that we're creating is very, very high quality content, because we, in the past, when people build stuff, they're trying to go around Google. We're like, why are you going to do that? Google has published clearly exactly what you need to do to build products that it will index and rank very, very well, right? And so we spent months learning that, reading and listening to everything that Google team and Google CEO and everything they've published about their standards called EATS and all these things. And we just built all that into our platform. And so we went from a place where, when we started this, the concept was Google will not index or rank AI content. And where the people that told us that, if you were to hire them as SEO experts, they're the ones who would tell you, oh, it's going to take 3 months or 6 months for things to get indexed and ranked. The stuff that we create get indexed and ranked within 24 to 48 hours so far. That's the average time that we're seeing. So you can go and literally use our platform, just copy and paste your URL into Traffic Monster, click one button, and we start generating blog pages for you pretty instantly. And then we can automatically publish and send them to Google, or you can do it manually if you want to. And the next day you'll start seeing them in Google search results. And we don't have a product that does that right now. We know what Google wants. We know where Google's going. I've been listening to all the interviews on podcasts from Google CEO. And where Google is going, they're seeing the internet being redefined. There's no question about it, right? And they're seeing what we consider content to be redefined. And so we're literally leveraging that. Blogs are a thing of the past, right? Where the internet is going is literally multimodal content, right? And that's what we're doing with Traffic Monster, is that we believe that we can create much more engaging content that is able to not only engage but to educate people, to sell you, to support you, you pretty much don't need a website, to capture traffic, to capture leads, right? So Traffic Monster is building all of these things right now, and we're putting them into the market. And so we believe that the direction that the entire search space is going, where the entire internet is going, we just believe that we're one of the first and one of the leading companies to be able to do that. And we did our research. So we believe that we know very clearly where Google themselves sees this is going. And we're, hand in hand, really just providing what they're hoping will show up in search results. And maybe in a couple of years, and we're delivering it today. So that's what we're doing.
Really cool. So down the road for what you're doing, what does the future look like for your product? Because right now you're mainly just doing LLM type solutions, right? And so what does the future look like? Where do you see possibilities for Traffic Monster?
Yeah. The way that I look at Traffic Monster is it really just started out as like a fun little project, right, that we were doing to get some visibility online. And it's evolved into something that we're just been getting amazing response from. We have marketers that are like back flipping over this, that they want to bring this out to their customers. So we're building all kinds of capabilities and features for marketers to be able to do this. We're building features for companies to white label the product as well, and integrate it with their existing products. So we're doing all of this stuff. We're doing it as kind of like a fun thing. We now started looking for funding so that we can build faster, we can scale faster with the things that we're doing. Where we see this all going is really nothing less than redefining the way that we bring products to market and the way that we do marketing for products going forward. I believe that the old way of doing it has changed already. I think it has. I just think that for the most part, I think people haven't seen it, and we didn't. We really didn't. We kind of fell into it because we're just trying to solve a problem for ourselves. And then as we went further down the road, we started seeing the greater potential of that. But if you're an entrepreneur and you build something that's really cool and you want to bring it to market, you're stifled economically for marketing costs more than anything else. And I believe that we solved that problem, that you're not stifled economically anymore. You can literally one click of a button and we solved that problem for you in a very affordable and very scalable way. And we believe that once people realize that they can do this, then I don't see where there are any other options right now. There'll be other people that will have their own variation of that over time, I believe. But I believe that from a fundamental way of, as long as Google, so Google is an important part of this, right? So Google primary thing is they make money from advertising, but their business is really how do they drive traffic to an ecosystem of different businesses. That's a big part of what they're doing. And how do they do that with high quality, engaging content, right? That's a really, really big part of Google's business. And if you are able to create very high quality, very engaging, very interactive content, then we would have improved the value that Google is providing, right? And so by improving the value that Google provides with this new kind of content, then I believe Google will rank this kind of content better in the future. And this is really where I think this is all going to go. And I don't have to guess it, because I can tell you that they're paying attention to where people are spending their time. If you're having pages that people go and drop off, you know, in 5 to 10 seconds, Google are going to be like, we don't care about that. But if you all of a sudden you have content that people are spending, you know, 5 or 10 minutes on, which is really how much time people spend on our stuff right now, right? If you're having content that people are spending time engaging with, they're going to pay attention and they're going to figure out how to reward you with that, right? And if you're playing by their rules, we're not trying to go around any rules, we're playing by their rules. And remember, Google want to be the number one AI technology in the world. And they're now fighting for that role with Microsoft through OpenAI. And so one of the arguments is, will Google index or want to interact with AI content? Of course they will. Why wouldn't they? They're the ones that are building the content, the platforms for the content anyway, right? You know, so there's no way Google's going to take a backseat to OpenAI when it comes to creating content, right? So our logic is very solid, right? And it's very early days for this. So, you know, we're taking that risk to be first in the market to be able to build this kind of technology. I'm perfectly fine with that because I think I'm very aware from doing a lot of research regarding where Google is today versus where they were 10 years ago. And the future of this is content in Google will be highly interactive and multimodal. That's where all of this is going. And we are building all of that right now, and we're putting it in the market right now. And the next step for us is just scaling that into the market. And we're building those networks, we're building those relationships. And we're now just at that point to provide earlier. I listened to a talk from Google CEO yesterday evening in an interview. And I don't think they expect this to happen for another year or so, you know. But this is definitely where from his own response to some related questions, this is where they're and I'm happy to share that with you later on, that interview, this is where that they're expecting the entire internet to go to in the future. And when I listened to that interview, I was pretty excited because that's exactly what we're thinking, and that's exactly where what we're building right now is. And so we'll be leading the pack with that particular solution to the problem that every company has, which is how do you get your product out there so that people can know about it, and how do you get traffic, how do you generate leads, how do you do all of these things in an affordable way. And so that's what we're building.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. I can't wait to see what the future brings to fruition for everything that you're doing. It sounds really exciting. You know, I'm definitely going to be following and telling everyone I know about what you're doing. So it's really exciting. So about an hour ago, we started this conversation off. We told the audience, hey, we're going to be talking about explainable AI today. One of the things that you brought up, and I'm just kind of bringing our entire conversation full circle, but one of the things you brought up was neuromorphic computing. And, you know, a lot of people are concerned that AI is advancing too quickly. It's advancing at breakneck speed, and we just can't keep up. And I think, you know, personally speaking, I think a lot of that tends to be smoke and mirrors. You know, I think that there are a lot of things that are happening with AI and that are going to happen that are not necessarily being advertised, you know. So I think the other part of what explainable AI is, it's not just, you know, its definition, you know, conceptually as a technology, explaining the why, but I think the other side of the definition of explainable AI and just really understanding what that means is what's happening behind closed doors. What's happening behind closed doors of these companies? How is AI produced? You know, what's the environmental impact or the collateral damage? Because, you know, ultimately, I think there's a lot of fear mongering going on. And I think there's a lot of misinformation, perpetual and purposeful misinformation, not that AI creates, that we create, that humans create, that the media creates. And, you know, I think honestly, until we have something like neuromorphic computing, we're not going to see a whole lot more complexity in the area of AI. I think what we're going to see is we're going to see an organization, a massive organization happening. You know, we're going to see, first off, we're going to solve this chip dilemma with something like neuromorphic computing. We're going to see more focus on regulation and security, and we're going to see massive expansion in vertical and horizontal industries. And there's going to be an education reform. There's going to be an education top down industry and every, human aspect of AI. Right. So, you know, just kind of bringing everything full circle, I'll summarize, you know, the other side of explainable AI, how can us as an audience in your mind, Rowan, how can us as an audience understand explainable AI and, from an economic, from a human standpoint, and what's happening, things that we don't see. And then, you know, what do you see the future of AI being, given that we don't really have the computing, the chip computing power to add more complexity to AI?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think the first part of the question, which is really from a human point of view, what can we do to make sure we know about what's happening, I think is kind of like the way I kind of like process or summarize that. Mm-hmm. And most companies are not using explainable AI. Most companies, I think, don't even know it exists, right? And I think that if you're in a company, if you're the CEO of a company, you want to know, because if you don't know, you're accepting a risk that you don't know. Okay. If you're putting products out there and you don't know why it's coming up with the conclusions that it does, then you're making a risk to your organization that you could do something wrong and someone could sue you, right? So I think that's the first thing. Companies should really, leaders and companies should really get more insights about what their AI is doing, especially customer public facing AI results. So I think that would be the first part of that. I think the second part of the point that you're making regarding neuromorphic computing is once it becomes more mainstream, I do believe that the computing power that we have will have exponential growth. And I think in what we're doing with generative AI and LLMs right now, the more computing power you can squeeze out, the more innovation you can have. And I do believe that will happen. I do believe that it will just become faster. And then the kind of question that would come to my mind is then what happens? Will Google's AI agent want to talk to OpenAI agents? Will they be exchanging information at that time? There are all kind of scenarios that it's really kind of hard to put together. But the one thing that we do know is that it's not going to go away. It's only going to get more complicated. Depending on who you listen to, we are already at this point of AGI. Elon Musk thinks that we're there with OpenAI. And some of the other scholars believe that it's not a tool that we have, that what we really have already that we're building is a new digital entity. So, we would consider ourselves to be physical entities, but they're digital entities. It doesn't mean that they're going to have a heart and a soul or whatever. But when you start creating things that can make decisions on their own, even now we're just dealing with, limited and weak AI. It's not really general AI as yet. But it is starting to make some basic, simple decisions, right? And the way where it's going is that it's going to start making more complex decisions. And then the kind of like what happened. So I don't really believe in the end of the world scenario. I think that we are pretty good as human beings of not killing ourselves. Even though we like to play with a gun, we often don't shoot ourselves. We don't mind shooting our enemies, but we don't really shoot ourselves very often, right? So I believe that we will certainly use it to try to conquer and demolish, as human beings do, our enemies. But we'll be around and no worried about that, right? So there will be more and more regulations to protect ourselves. There'll be, which is necessary. There'll need to be some understanding globally from the large entities. So all of those things, I think, will happen just because our need for survival is going to dictate those kinds of things. We may need to have some big catastrophic loss first before everyone get on the same page, but I believe that's going to happen. So I think the summary of that is that explainable AI is one of the early steps in giving us transparency and accountability for what we're building. I believe that the regulatory folks will need to build that as a requirement into the things that we're building, and especially a requirement where the AI will have the capability of doing harm. So I think that will need to happen, and I'll be shocked if it does not happen. And so I think that will be the safeguards that we can expect. But I think consumers will need to demand that as well. Why doesn't my bank have something to explain why the AI is making a decision, right? Or even your own company, hey, I want to make sure that the decisions our AI makes for who they hire, that we are all clear regarding that it's equitable for everyone, that we want to also make sure that the decisions for salaries, we're not underpaying women because AI think that's the way it should be because of the data points that it has, that it's transparent for everyone so that I'm working with a company that I believe is doing the right thing and that I can support it and I can feel good and proud of it. And I think that companies will realize that by making this information more transparent to their own people, but also externally. So both internally and externally, I think it's going to be a really, really good thing for the company and not a bad thing. And I think that companies over time will be judged as well based on the kind of transparency that they have for the kind of decisions that they're relying on from the AI side they have. So that's the way that I would think about it, going forward.
Makes sense. That's pretty good insight. That's really, you've given me a lot to think about, and I think you've, definitely provided a lot to chew on for, our audience. I think with everything that we talked about, I think what's most important is that, we look on the bright side of things. I think there's a lot of negativity in this world, and the human instinct is fight or flight. And we inherently fight things that we don't know or that we don't understand, which is why explainability in this space, is so imperative. But we also, it's important that we look on the bright side because AI is a regulation in itself, in a way, right? It helps us regulate ourselves, because it can provide us insights into, things because it's so algorithmic, or it's so exact, right? There's no veering, right? There's no veering outside of, lanes. So the important thing is that we feed it the right data, and then it in turn will keep us humans who tend to veer outside in the, less than maybe ethical territories, it kind of keeps us in that right, aspect of things, right? It keeps us in that right mode of action, so to speak, because there's been a lot of, for example, what we talk about bias in AI, right? Humans naturally themselves are biased because, we just naturally, psychologically speaking, physiologically, we're just naturally biased because that's our fight or flight instinct kicking in. The point is when we can't control it and we let it get out of hand. And in the past, humans have been known to do pretty awful things, right? And so it really is in itself a kind of like, I see it as kind of like a regulation tool that will keep humans from perpetually, inevitably destroying themselves, right? Because you mentioned before that humans are pretty good at keeping themselves safe, right? Avoiding danger, but when it comes to when it comes to putting the other person in danger or putting groups of other people, we've been known to do that, right? But us as individuals, we're just naturally good at avoiding danger, right? But if it's an outside threat, which is where AI kicks in, where we could potentially threaten other people, I think, AI is a good thing. I think the thing that we have to be careful with regards to AI, and if you want to comment on this, and I think maybe, we can kind of close out, but I think one of the things that we have to be careful with is, the AI is really psychology based, right? It doesn't work without data. It can't work without data, but all data is maybe you and me talking, or you and me sharing an email back and forth, right? Or me or you putting a post on social media and sharing with the community. That's really all data is. It's just words and images, and there's psychology behind all of that. And so at the core of it, you know, AI is really just a bit of psychology, right? With technology, piled on top. And the only way to organize AI and to make it work is to organize that data. And the only way to organize and sort through that data is to have labels. And so you get into things like coding race, labeling race, or gender or ethnicities and things that should be, you know, things that should be not necessarily set in stone because they're always changing. And then we get in the labeling, and I think that's where, you know, bias comes from. So I think, you know, we have to look at AI in a positive way, is a way to control potential, you know, human atrocities and to control, you know, the Hyde part of humans versus the Jekyll part, right? But at the same time, we also have to make sure that we're engineering AI and that we have good people building these algorithms. And so we really have to look at the people who are building these algorithms. And, you know, and when we're labeling this data, you know, we have to make sure that, you know, we're labeling it and that we're building these algorithms in a way that doesn't ostracize people, right? And so those are, in closing, you know, those are the kind of the things that I wanted to mention. If you have any comments there, and then from there, you know, if you can kind of just tell people how to get a hold of you, if you want to maybe, you know, give them the information, your website or a way to get a hold of you, and any closing thoughts.
Yeah, certainly. Thank you. I think that if you're, it all depends on how you, the way you train the data, right? So with neural networks, the prevailing way right now is that the AI is really kind of like self-learning and training itself. And it doesn't really need external data. It's just creating synthetic data on its own. We're going, if you have a million AI creating its own data, creating synthetic data, we're like in a whole different world than we were like just a couple of years ago. So that's kind of like crazy. And we're going to have to see where that goes. And the more compute power you have, then the faster that kind of thing will scale as well. I mean, AI is fascinating. I can talk all day long about it. But let's wrap up, you know, thanks for having me on the program. It's been fantastic. Where people can reach me, you can just go to rohanhall.com. That's my full name, Rohan, R-O-H-A-N-H-A-L-L-L.com. And you can find basically all kind of stuff about me. If you want to learn more about Traffic Monster, where we're using AI and AI agents to help companies with online visibility and traffic and leads, et cetera, just go to trafficmonster.ai, no spaces or dashes, just trafficmonster.ai, and you can get all the information there as well.
Hey, this has been amazing. I really appreciate your time. I hope the audience has enjoyed our conversation. And Rohan, hats off to you. I appreciate what you're building and everything that you're doing in this space. And I've known you for a little while now. And I think you're an excellent person to be building, you know, AI systems that we can all use to make our lives easier and advance the world, advance our products and our companies forward. So we need more people like you, building great things that, in the AI space that we can use and that can improve our world. Thanks again.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you.